Hello and welcome to Curiosity Conversations with me, Scott Drummond. It's January and that means the topic I'm exploring is courage. And so helping me to explore that topic today is Andrea, professional coach, founder of I Am. Andrea and I have known each other since we met attending an Art of Hosting training in Brighton a few years ago. And I'm just super excited to have you here, Andrea.
Thank you very much, Scott. And thanks for inviting me on. It's lovely to get curious about courage with you today. Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, yeah. I don't have a structure that I usually dive into, although I confess, here's a confession, when I started thinking about doing these curiosity conversations, I got a bit nervous because of the whole live thing. And so I wrote a list of, you know, questions. I thought that would be a great way to start and everything. And I've never once followed it. But just to mix things up, why don't I dive in with my first question, which is,
great.
Do you have a first memory of courage or of maybe even feeling the need for courage?
Oh, that's a good one. The first thing that popped in my head, and I'm just going to go with it, it might not be the most courageous thing I've done, but speaking in front of large groups of people absolutely terrifies me. And I remember I worked for an online fast fashion company called ASOS.com. You might have heard of them. And my whole, it was a brilliant experience in the beginning because it was all about bringing the culture to life and there was a real pioneering spirit there. And I helped them to grow from 100 to 800 people in the space of four
wow.
years, which was awesome. And I, you know, I really got to see as all this kind of talent came in, there was lots of excitement, but it became much more difficult to communicate big messages to sort of the larger group of employees that we had. So we did this kind of brand strategy thing, but we didn't want it to be just like, you know, loads of presentations. Anyway, somehow I ended up on the stage of Coco, which is in Camden. I don't know if it still exists. Camden Palais is what it used to be called. And each of the sort of directors or people that kind of led the leadership team, we had to get up on this stage and just talk about the future of the business. The sound was appalling. No one could hear us. It was a bit like, you know, it's in darkness in the middle of the day. It had that kind of nightclub feel to it. And I just remember getting on the stage and I kind of, you know, had all the things I wanted to talk about. And no one could really hear me. And I just thought, it. I'm just going to enjoy myself. I used to come clubbing here in the 90s and here I am now standing on a stage with, you know, a load of people. I'm trying to be this professional head of HR, which, you know, never suited me. So I just had a lot of fun and laughter. I didn't know if anyone could hear me. And it was just the courage to get up there and just think, oh, do you know what? This is my worst nightmare, but I'm just going to enjoy it. And yeah, I think that was kind of a courageous thing for me to do, and to enjoy it was, I guess, an act of radical defiance in the like, this is terrifying, but I'm just going to go for it and enjoy it.
I really love this example because it, you know, I think one definition of courage is that, you know, courage is acting in the presence of fear or obstacles or challenges. So it's not the absence of fear or obstacles or challenges, it's encountering those and then choosing to act, right? But I just love that, you know, in this place, you know, spotlight on you, everyone looking to you, standing in this role that, you know, was obviously yours to inhabit but didn't maybe feel 100% like you, and then the response being like, fuck it, I'm gonna have fun. Right, leaning into fun is for me really interesting. Is that, do you know, does that represent kind of more of who you are, right? Like going towards that fun angle?
I think when I really let myself go with it, I think fuck it is probably like an internal dialogue that I do have. Like, I am often, like so many of us, I can get really crippled with doubt, self-doubt, and the sort of the need to get it right can be so paralyzing And actually, that little, my powerful self is a wise woman called Iris May. She's very bohemian, and she's just really like, okay, let's just go for it and enjoy it. And when I let her, you know, that wisdom come through in me, I do really dance with it and have a lot of fun. And it brings out a mischievous side to me. And yeah, I don't want to follow a path or a mold or a, and I have fallen into that trap and I have done those things.
Yeah.
And it's so limiting and uncomfortable and draining. And I really enjoy life now that I live it as I am, as I truly am. And so, yeah, we all go into different new things. You know, I love coming up with new ideas. So I have to find that energy within me quite a lot, actually. Because it's like, oh, I get really excited about ideas and then I want to do it. And then the reality is, oh, right, okay, so I need to make this happen. You need to find that sort of fuck it in you somewhere to just go forward and take that step into the unknown. And it also gives you permission to enjoy it. Yeah.
And I know that you're a co-active coach as well, that you're a professional certified coach. Is this the sort of work that you do with the people that you work with as well? You know, or is this just like you spoke about Iris May, you've clearly kind of tapped into this place in you that is courageous and mischievous and creative and free. Is this the sort of work that you do in coaching as well?
Definitely. It absolutely is. And it's an absolute privilege and a pleasure. Like when I meet people, I see the brilliance in them. Like maybe not immediately, but I love just that spaciousness of hearing them. And I just want to create a space for them to live their truth, because I know how liberating it is. And I also know from my own experience that to be really fully confident and courageous in yourself, you have to live your truth. So yes, I do that work with my clients. I help them to, you know, be bolder in their confidence, their creativity and their impact. But it all starts with who they truly are, and really allowing them to see that and experience it. And you know, Scott, as a co-active coach, we've got a whole set of tools that we use to do that. But it's been quite life-changing for me becoming a co-active coach, because it's the thing that finally allowed me to be creative in the way that I work, and to really accept my creativity and to set myself free with it. So I use all the tools that we learn as we kind of become certified professional coaches, but I use them in my own way. And much as I'm sure you use them in your own way, and that makes us unique. But my thing is all about helping people get really clear on who they are. So it's identity and direction. I think once you're really clear on who you are, like, anything's possible.
And, you know, what strikes me about what you're saying there as well is, you've probably heard this as well. You know, sometimes if your ideal client as a coach is you from, you know, a year ago or 6 months ago even, or however long ago. But, you know, I'm struck by your journey to where you are now, to use that well-worn metaphor, has seen you kind of wake up to who you really are, you know, discover this identity. And clearly, and I'm, you know, clearly there's a piece here around boldness too. So, you know, this is the work that you do with I Am. You've got this learning community called Bolder. I want to hear more about this word bold. What does bold mean? Because we've got this term courage. You know, somewhat understood. I think we all have a kind of, you know, general understanding of what courage is. Perhaps we've never looked into it in much detail. I'm curious, what does boldness mean to you?
I think it's all about vibrancy for me. So I probably first started writing about it a few years ago. Like, writing is a massive source of creativity for me. It's kind of where I really connect with you know, what's going on internally and my wants and desires. And I suppose as I'm like in my late 40s, like the aging process was something I really started questioning as I was getting older. And, you know, that whole perception of as a woman in your 40s, it's all about, which is quietly fading to grey. And I really wanted to rebel against that and to become more vibrant and more bold and more outspoken. And, you know, I really get inspiration from a lot of women who do that. So like Gloria Steinem, who is, you know, the epitome of the women's movement and really not shuffling off quietly into a corner. I mean, she's now in her 80s and she's still absolutely encouraging women to speak out, you know, for equality. So I think boldness for me is about amplifying the colourful vibrancy within you, like that soul aspect.
I was going to say it's also about very specifically about not being dulled by a culture or society that maybe has already got a future in mind for you if you're a woman, and is kind of pushing you in a direction of like playing small.
Yes, and I think that's been a whole thing for me. You know, when I followed the path of that, what I thought success looked like, that kind of predefined mold, it made me so miserable and so anxious. That I watched something yesterday which was talking a bit about should we imitate other successful people. Of course, like, I was just screaming like no, because my own experience of it was so painful, and obviously the discussion unfolded, it was about no, of course not. And often when we come from a place of where we've experienced pain, that can become our purpose, that can become our thing, that we want to help others that are maybe going through that because we've experienced it ourselves. So I think breaking the mold and doing it in your own way was, you know, like my first act of, you know, my own truth. So having a really successful career on paper and all the trappings of success, it was so uncomfortable. And I completely lost sight of who I was. And it was painful and I was quite burned out by the end of it. But to help others to see their truth and live their truth is really a privilege and liberating. So I think just setting yourself free from the definition of society's definition of success. That was my first act of boldness in helping others. And then, as I'm aging, I suppose it is that, well, if we've done all the right things and we've followed all the right things and we're still miserable, then, you know, I want to invite others to turn up the dial and on their sort of vibrancy within, and to not feel they have to shuffle off quietly into the corner, to use what they have.
Yeah, I mean, what a beautiful vision, right? You know, you know, it doesn't sound that radical in a way when you explain it so clearly, but a lot of, I mean, when you talked about feeling burned out and a bit lost, you know, in terms of who you were at this point in your career, you know, it was lighting up all the buttons for me. It's, you know, it's part of my story too. You know, jumping through all the right hoops, always being a diligent and hardworking young man, and following a kind of relatively traditional path. And, you know, just quickly, no, you know, don't get the violins out. I'm not asking for sympathy. I think I was largely drifting and, you know, following the default pattern without questioning it, but very much found myself at a time in my career where ostensibly I should have been happy. I was in the kind of biggest gig that I'd had. I had the most responsibility. I was working with the biggest clients and had the biggest salary and all the rest of it. And I felt so lost. And, you know, when the spotlight was on me, I couldn't be in the spotlight at that time. It was so hard because I felt so disconnected from the person I was having to be You know, and I'm reminded of this great, it's a great piece of writing from James Joyce in a short story called A Painful Case from his collection of short stories called Dubliners, where he writes this line. It says, "Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body." And it's just an amazing line, because you don't see what's coming. Then that's something that I really experienced. You know, this feeling of a disembodied feeling. You know, showing up. You know, very much. You know, talking, hearing myself talking. You know, but feeling so disconnected from the version of me that I was having to be. And I wondered, you know, for you, does boldness show up for you in an embodied way? Like when you're feeling bold, do you have a way that you stand or a voice that you use?
I don't think so. I think it just feels right. I just feel alive. I feel, I mean, I do love a vibrant colour. I love wearing vibrant colours, but I just feel like I'm completely me. And I don't have to watch or think about what's going to come from my mouth, or, you know, the level three thing, Scott, like when you're really listening deeply to a client and like, you know, you're not conscious of anything else except for them, what's coming up, and just the sort of the world around you is quiet and peaceful, and you're truly engaged. Like, I think that's what boldness feels like. It just feels like you're completely aligned and you're completely alive, and you don't have to justify or explain. It just feels right, and you don't have to impress anybody either, because it's not what it's about. And I love that line you just shared from James Joyce. Is it James Joyce?
James Joyce.
He lived a short distance away from his body, because it's so uncomfortable, isn't it, when you feel that disconnection from who you truly are. And the sort of, I questioned myself all the time, like, what's wrong with you? Why can't you enjoy this? Or, you know, and that can be a natural thing when you're that disconnected. You compare yourself to others. And I think consumerism is completely set us up for that, doesn't it? Because it's consumerism is all about, you know, convincing the person they need to have more, 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 and they need to buy more, more, more to find happiness. And so it's naturally pitting us against each other, because it's making us compare, well, I want what he's got or she's got. And so you can never really truly find that internal comfort, like, of enough is good.
Well, I get that, you know, as somebody who still does a little bit of work in that field, but spent nearly 15 years working in media and advertising. I mean, this obviously resonates, this idea that a big part of what I did for a while professionally, and more generally of the way, you know, a lot of our digital platforms, technology platforms work, is to sort of say, look everywhere but inside. Right. Look over here. Look over here. And, you know, we talk about the attention economy. Right. Everybody is vying for our attention. And in effect, you know, a big part of the work that I do with clients, and I'm sure it's the same for you, is switching clients on to turning their attention towards themselves, you know, in the most generous and loving way possible. You know, but almost saying to the rest of the world, can you just fucking pipe down for a second? I need to spend a bit of time connecting to myself to figure out what's going on here. And once I've done that, great. Then let's go out into the world, bring what I've uncovered about myself, and let's learn how I am in the world. You know, it's just occurred to me, you know, your business, I think, is called I Am, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
We're right in that territory, Andrea.
Absolutely. But that is... I think because I've lived with the great discomfort of not being truly who I am, like I know how liberating it is when you are aligned and you do feel true. And it might sound really simple, but actually there's a lot of quite uncomfortable work you have to do, because when you quiet in the noise and there's nothing else but you to look internally, it's quite uncomfortable to hang out with stuff that's holding you back. And also, when you go through that door of, oh, I'm not that, that's not who I am. I thought I was this person, and I'm not that person. So, you know, it's quite discombobulating. So it does take a lot of courage to do that work.
So let's us jump in if you want, and I'm happy to as well, but let's be courageous then a little bit. And I'm straight away, my thought goes to, like, what's the most uncomfortable work that you've had to dive into? Or, you know, let's talk about our own experience. When did we really have to face something uncomfortable within ourselves? And, you know, because that's where we really had to show up courageously, right?
And maybe
first time round, we didn't have the courage to do it. And we said, I'm going to pack that away and come back to you in a few years' time or something. But, I'm just thinking, you know, for me recently, I've been exploring quite a lot my role as a dad. You know, and my role as a dad, like, I love being a dad. Just straight up, it's a lot of fun. It shows me who I am every day. So if I'm grumpy, then, you know, in Marshall and my relationship, that'll come out. If I'm impatient, that'll come out. If I'm really playful and mischievous, that'll come out. So it's almost like it's a great, you know, being a dad, I'm not sure if it's true for mums, I guess it is, is a bit like a mirror. You know, you see yourself a lot. And so in that sense, I think it's a great way to kind of wake up to yourself and learn what you have to do. But you're certainly within that. I've had to face some uncomfortable truths, things like, you know, I'm an angry person at times. I can be very judgmental. You know, and these are things that I've kind of understood about myself at times within my life. But when you're really confronted with them, you know, I remember one time, and this is like calling to mind, you know, a time when it really felt a bit uncomfortable, is losing my lid about something minor with Marshall. I think, you know, as kids are wont to do, he'd been winding me up in his own magical way all day. And I didn't have much, you know, in the way of patience that day anyway, I'm sure. And I just lost it. And, you know, I got into one of these like tirades where you're just sort of berating this poor little kid in front of you. I think he was probably eight years old, you know, and he's getting a full serve. I mean, absolutely unjustified, you know, and it's not about him, right? It's about all the other tensions and things that I'm carrying that I'm not really processing. And I just remember, as I was like, rah, 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 I remember that, you know, his face sort of crumble and he was just burst into tears. And it wasn't so much, you know, the tears were, you know, I was instantly like, oh my God, you know, you suddenly realize, Christ, I'm caught in the emotion and I'm being just, you know, not where I wanted to be. But it was actually that he was scared. He was actually quite scared at that moment. And I think, I don't know, like, even saying it now, like, actually my voice trembles a bit, because that is really not a place I ever wanted to be as a dad, you know, is to be in a place where my kids look at me and I can see like fear in their eyes, like, you know, because he could see that I wasn't really in control, you know, I wasn't really in control of my emotion and everything. And that was, you know, to have to turn to face that and say, like, okay, where does that come from? You know, where does that sense of, you know, out of control, rage and anger come from? And, you know, who am I when I'm in that place? And to also, you know, to go exploring there was, I think, yeah, that's been some of the more challenging work for me, because being with conflict and being with rage is not my easiest place. You know, being with love and being with, you know, gratitude and being with all sorts of other emotions, certainly being with compassion and grief and shame, that stuff is actually, you know, it's all hard, but a bit easier for me. But rage and anger are difficult ones. And the way that showed up in that relationship, you know, with Marshall, just kind of, you know, really, you know, like I spoke before, is a mirror to what was going on for me, and has triggered in me, you know, a real desire and a courage to kind of go exploring in that space. And that has been uncomfortable, because I've had to confront, you know, where that comes from. It's led me to conversations around, you know, my upbringing as well, where some of that anger comes from too. And yeah, that, you, like you said, you know, those aren't conversations that everyone wants to sign up for, you know, those aren't, you know, But
Because
you know,
you've got to look at an aspect of yourself that is not pleasant and it is uncomfortable to accept. But what did you get from accepting it, Scott?
Yeah, listen, I first of all, it's been an amazing experience. Like, it's given me so much. And I'll speak a bit about what that is. And I also just want to say, like, I'm still doing it, right? You know, it's not like I've reached some zen-like plane of never getting angry and observing my emotions in this serene and beautiful way. Like, I'm the same as everybody else. I get caught in this, in my anger or my frustration. You know, if you get in the car with me, Christ, you'll see where I exploit or express some of that anger, you know. Fuck this, fuck that, you know. But I think, you know, part of it has for me just been about leaning into it, you know, knowing that it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. And in fact, the only real problem is when you don't express it, right? When you try to be the nice guy all the time, you know, trying to be the calm and rational and reasonable person. And under the surface, all those small mini frustrations, sometimes the big stuff that's really unconscious, it's still bubbling away. And there's no outlet for that. And eventually what happens? Well, you end up screaming at your 8-year-old and they're looking at you like, you know, so for me, I think, you know, one of the great gifts has been just like really accepting it in myself and saying, you know, in fact, I almost like, sometimes I quite like getting in the car and having a drive around, having a bit of a rant.
I was going to say, so do I. I go for a Foo Fighters drive sometimes.
Yeah.
You can feel it through it and just have a really good like kind of sing, scream. And it lets it out. And I think you're really right. Like, anger is not accepted in society. It's kind of really frowned upon and judged. But it does need somewhere to go. And it gives us information, the same as all of our emotions. When it's spent and when it kind of shifts, it's like, ooh, you can get curious about it, can't you? Or you can think, well, what information is that giving me? But yeah, if you push it down and push it down, where does it go? And it can lead to sort of all sorts of mental health problems and physical problems
100%.
As well. So it needs to come out somehow, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, so yes, and just to draw on the point that you raised about, you know, where we hold this stuff in our body as well, right? Because you don't have to have this coming to Jesus moment where you're screaming at your 8-year-old and realizing, shit, this is not where I wanted to be. You can also recognize, and this is something I try and practice as much as possible. This is kind of like, you know, if you want to call it a tip or a trick, I don't know if any of the listeners do something similar, probably. You're just noticing in your body when that anger or whatever that emotion is that, you know, you tend to hang on to and not express, when that starts to build a little bit. So I'll often find a little bit of tension in my shoulders. Maybe I'm just not really relaxed in my shoulders or I'm holding my belly in a little bit. You know, that might be just the beginning of like, I'm just holding on to something. And so what I try and do, like, you know, first of all is notice it. Don't always notice it. But when I do notice it, then I just kind of laugh a little bit at it. Say, oh, there I go again, trying to hold something in. Then I sort of just try and just really let that go. Whatever the tension is, I just shake it out. Sometimes that's all it takes. You know, it's not like you have to go to the gym and scream as you pound the punch bag. It's not that anger sometimes doesn't start from that place, right?
No.
You know, anger can be quite subtle and small and it can be held in this very delicate way. So I just try and tune into my body. You know, a lot of that is, you know, one of the reasons I like going to swim in the sea, like going for runs, generally getting outside when we can, is it just connects me to my body. So if I am holding stuff, I know about it. Like it's a time for noticing. And if I notice, then I can say, okay, I'm gonna, sometimes I don't know what it is, right? It's not like, oh, that looks and feels exactly like anger. It must be about the experience. It's not that at all. I'm just like, oh, I'm holding on to something. So let's just kind of let go as much as I can or just sit with that and see what it feels like. So it's more just giving space to that stuff. And I think, you know, one of the great benefits of having a kind of daily practice, whatever it is, whether it's a walk, whether it's a sing, whether it's a dance, whether it's, you know, something more, you know, spiritual like meditation or prayer, it's just a place where you get to listen in to yourself and notice if you're holding on to something or if there's something bubbling away. So instead of letting that stuff broil and bubble and eventually build up, and you know, obviously it needs an outlet, you start to just vent some of that gas before it needs to, you know, explode.
Does that make
mean your experience as well?
Well, so my the question was about, you know, discovering stuff that is uncomfortable in us. And what came to mind for me was in our co-active training, like the core curriculum, we go through these different modules. So effectively, we're looking a lot at ourselves before we're able to coach others. And I remember, I can't remember what module it's in, but a wonderful coach, he's a very wise man called Anthony. He did a lot of my coach training, and he was my coach for a while. And they go around and they put labels on you. Do you remember that exercise? They actually put a label on you.
Oh, yeah. I know this one really well, yeah.
Yeah. So I kept getting lots of feedback about, oh, you're so kind and you're so sweet and, you know, you're so lovely. And inside I'm like, oh, I don't want to be those things. Like, they're all nice and, you know, what is expected of a woman. But that's not who I want to be as a coach, because where's that going to get anyone, you know? It's
right,
all very nice and gentle and bleh. Anyway, Anthony stuck this label on me and it said fishwife. And I was like, what? Like, what? You know, what does that mean? And so once I eventually kind of calmed myself down, I was like, okay, so a fishwife is someone who's kind of really straight talking, I guess. I imagined a sort of Pat Butcher type character. Really outspoken, salt of the earth, looking out for her own, but, you know, really packing a punch and telling it how it is. So then, you know, from that exercise, you have to coach someone in that way. Wow, it was really uncomfortable, but it was also really liberating, because I could finally just truly observe and say, look, here's what I'm noticing. And I kind of hammed it up a little bit, you know, as you do. I could kind of really play with this, and, you know, I didn't go all Cockney on them or anything, but, you know, it was like just that really, just tell it how it is, that really kind of liberating truth. And it doesn't have to be, you know, wrapped up in and with a nice big bow or anything, but also you don't want to whack them over the head with a big mallet. It just comes from a place of, you know, honest intention of, I see the best in you, I want you to get to where you're longing to get to, here's what I'm noticing is holding you back, like, and that has to come. You have to have the courage as a coach to truly be in service of your clients, to speak truly, to tell them what you're really noticing. And the whole bold action thing, it came from, you know, part of being part of that collective community is like people really witness your growth as you're going through that process, and there's a real intimacy and a trust that comes from that. And then you start to become really honest with each other, don't you? Once you get you know, you see each other growing and you tried it out a little bit. So I thought, well, I'm going to experiment with that. I'm going to see if I can, you know, bring together a group of women who kind of know themselves fairly well, but they're maybe a bit stuck and they maybe want to take it to the next level. And I use some of the tools that we use in coaching discovery. But it was an experiment, and I asked for their permission to experiment. And at the end of every session, it's all about, okay, so what are we going to do with this? And you know, what action are you going to take? And that wasn't enough. I kept saying, well, come on, what bold action are you going to take? And I'd really turn up the dial with them, because I could see they're capable of so much more. And so this became a bit of a mantra, you know, oh, here she goes, bold action. Action's not enough. She's got to be bold. And I noticed the shift that came in these women when they did really step into that. And by the end of this time, they were all coaching each other. Like, you know, I really wasn't doing a lot of work with them, because they could see the potential in each other. And they would be really like, hang on a minute, that's not your truth. Or, you know, yeah, this is coming up, it's your saboteur. I know you're capable of so much more. So, yeah, I think boldness and courage is about speaking truly and when you see the potential in others, it's doing them the service of being honest with them when they are on self-limiting beliefs or holding them back, or you know they're capable of so much more and they're playing it safe. And so it's that invitation to turn up the dial. Come on, you could be a bit bolder. If you're going to take action, you might as well take bold action, because why not?
Yeah, and look, something I love about where we are in this conversation right now is we're talking about really practical things, simple things, right? Yeah. Or maybe, simple but not easy, right? They aren't complicated things to do, but they aren't necessarily easy when the nature of your relationship with somebody is maybe characterized by friendliness or kindness or some of those wonderful emotions, but also perhaps there hasn't always been that, speaking truth to each other kind of honesty on that level. I'm thinking out loud, for people listening, what's a great way to start stepping into that, speaking your truth in a way that is also, I guess, sympathetic or compassionate or a bit understanding to people, because I can imagine the advice, go forth and speak your truth could also, get people into some pretty gnarly conversations that they feel a bit out of their depth. What's a great way to get started speaking your truth to people?
Well, I mean, it took me quite a long time, Scott, and some other work we've done together is looking at our saboteurs, the whole positive intelligence thing. So I, part of this sweetness and, really playing it safe that lived in me, was a people pleaser. It was just doing and saying what I thought people wanted to hear and being very agreeable, even if that wasn't my opinion, because conflict was a bit uncomfortable, or being very subservient to them rather than, really challenging. And it leads you to be resentful. And I remember reading an article in the School of Life just basically saying, look, the people pleaser is a liar. Like, you're lying to yourself and others. And that was like, because I've got a really strong value about truth, and it's quite sobering. It's like, this is not good enough for you, and it's not good enough for them. So, a really practical thing is like, is it kind to just tell people what they want to hear? Is that helpful to them? And really, it isn't. So, if your intention comes from a good place, if you are speaking truly in service of them getting to a better place, then surely that's better. Surely that's the kindest thing you can do than just telling them what they want to hear. And it might be uncomfortable if you have a relationship with someone and there's something about them that, it really grates on you. But if you really want that person to be in your life and you want to have a good relationship with them, then you don't have to hit them around the head with a big mallet, as I say, but you need to find a way to open up that honest dialogue to say, look, I love you, I want to have you in my life, but I find this creates a lot of tension and discomfort in me, like I just want to tell you that honestly, like that's terrifying, but how wonderful for that person to really experience the true you.
Listen, that's I love actually, because you demonstrated it a little bit when you gave that little example, which is, first of all, leading with, I love you. The nature of the relationship, like I care about you. This is coming from a place of love and care and appreciation. And then, turning to and or but, this is, this is how I feel when X happens, which is, again, a bit less kind of like the thing that's wrong with you is X.
So
I guess taking responsibility for your own feelings in that conversation too.
Exactly, because if you're in a relationship, or you're even as a colleague, if you've got a colleague that's there's something that's not working in that relationship, then you're both part of that relationship. You both bring something. So if you want to have a valuable relationship with someone, then you need to be honest. And it could be if they're constantly asking you for something, there's a boundary that needs to be put in place. Can put boundaries in place. We all can in relationships and in life. And I think I sort of joke when I do talk sometimes about I'm a recovering people pleaser, but you know, there is always that temptation of, oh, it's an easy life, let's just go with it and tell them what they want to hear, or, oh, I'll just do that thing that you're asking me to do, even though I really don't want to do it, or I don't have the time, or, but, so it takes courage to speak the truth in that and invest in that relationship. And, you know, if the relationship's not worth investing in, fair enough, that tells you something in itself, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, we've touched on, I'm loving this conversation. We've touched on so many different kind of variants of courage already. You know, the courage to be ourselves, the courage to speak the truth to somebody else, the courage to turn to do the uncomfortable work that maybe leads to the courage to be ourselves.
Mm.
I mean, here we are in the middle of it, practicing it, I guess, as well, you know. And that's been something that's been interesting for me is stepping into kind of mapping where my comfort zone is at the moment, you know, like almost kind of exploring where the edges are. Where do I feel comfortable, and where does it start to move from feeling comfortable to like a bit edgy over there? You know, look, one of the reasons I wanted to do these conversations, well, in truth, the first reason I wanted to do these curiosity conversations is I feel kind of most alive when I'm having a conversation with somebody about topics that they're passionate about or that we're passionate about. And so, you know, agreeing to do these conversations is, you know, helping me feel really alive. So that's number one. But then I thought, well, you know, I'm going to do them live. And part of the reason I wanted to do it live is, you know, that felt uncomfortable at the time. You know, oh, shit, well, I'll need to have a plan. You know, I'll need to have some questions, and I'll want to get just the right people on and everything like that. And I, you know, I understood enough at that point to know that basically my fear of stepping outside of my comfort zone was causing me to suddenly leap into kind of perfectionist behavior, you know, hyperachiever, sort of like must get everything right sort of behavior. And so as my antidote to that, like recognizing that I was at the edge of my comfort zone, I thought, fuck it. Okay.
Yeah.
The way to get through this is just to say, I'm going to do it live and figure out what happens next. And so it's been really interesting inviting people on, because the live thing, I think, is uncomfortable for everybody to some extent. Mm. You know, almost every single person, you're the fourth curiosity conversation now, and I think everybody has had a certain amount of, you know, live, okay, I guess, you know, and a bit of trepidation about going live. And it's funny, isn't it? You know, we just naturally have these areas that we just don't feel comfortable in, or where our comfort currently sits. And what I'm really curious about, and something I've been exploring in is, where is that for me? And what are the practices, like little games I can play, little experiments I can run?
Mm.
Not grand gestures, not huge, great, big, courageous, heroic steps forward, but more like little things, really, almost, you know, whimsical or small little things, which from the outside, some people will look at and say, well, that's not really that courageous, is it? But for me, they've just been experiments in stepping outside of that comfort zone. And that's, you know, where I'm at now on courage is really, you know, wanting for other people that same kind of curiosity about their own comfort zone, where the edges of that are. And then, okay, there's a creativity in saying, right, I don't really like speaking, standing up on stage and speaking. What's one way, one little way I could do that? Well, maybe I could, you know, get a few mates around and we'll have a kind of charades night or something, but I'll host it and we'll do like a little mini open mic, but just our mates. You know, so I think there's kind of more playful, fun and sort of silly ways that we can explore this that lower the risk of us experiencing like a real sense of unsafety, you know, and at the same time start flexing that courage muscle a bit and give us, you know, the small wins that help us to continue. Yeah, this question, this sort of idea of little courage experiments, is that something that sort of resonates with you?
Definitely. And I think in the last couple of years, what's really helped me to be more courageous is just giving myself permission to experiment. So, to try things out. And I worked with a beautiful coach who always used to say to me, follow your enthusiasm, does it bring you joy? So that's always been my barometer, Scott, is It's just following my enthusiasm, and if there's something that lights me up about it, you know, it's joyous, or I think, yeah, like I really want to do this, then I go for it. So, you know, like I've maybe done some Instagram lives, or I've joined in some podcasts, or I've written certain things, and that's always my test. Like, do I feel enthusiastic about this? Is it like lighting me up? Does it bring me joy? And if it does, I go for it, and I just give myself permission to experiment. Like, you know, you always have that little bit when you come off the call or you've done something different. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, maybe I could have said that. But, you know, generally, I feel really like, oh, I really love that. That was great. As I'm sure I will when I come off this call from you. It's like,
well,
I am that. It's like, this is great. I'm really enjoying this.
Well, I was going to say, you've opened up this great little moment here where I got a couple of questions for you. One is, where does your enthusiasm want to go next, Andrea? And then the other one is, you know, if you had permission to experiment in this call, what would you do so that you don't come off the call and say, oh, I could have done, you know, what feels courageous right now?
Oh, that's putting me back on the spot, isn't it? I need to think away enthusiasm.
I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but if you fancy going here, let's practice.
So I think, so the first part was what's bringing me enthusiasm? Yeah. Is that, where does it want to take me?
Where does your enthusiasm want to go?
I think it really kind of wants to extend my reach. So it's in my writing. I'm really enjoying the whole Boulder thing has opened so much up. So I got the kind of a newsletter around Boulder Living. And it's about inspiring others with those that are walking the walk. So, you know, I'm getting to talk to some fabulous people that have maybe started up a business in pandemic, or, you know, they're pushing the boundaries in what they do. So I guess it may be contacting people that I think, oh my God, you know, they've got like thousands of followers. They won't want to be on my little newsletter. And I'm walking towards... I get positive news, and I was reading about this amazing woman called Chris Halenga. She's the founder of Copperfeel, which is all about breast cancer, and she's living with stage 4 breast cancer. And
so
a bold action for me when I get off this call might be to contact her and say, hey, I was so inspired by you. I'd love to feature you in my newsletter to hear more about your story. And I shouldn't be put off with the fact that she's got, I don't know, 30,000, 70,000 something followers, because we all have to start somewhere, right?
I love that.
I think it is about, I'm following this season. I really want to hear more about her story and what it's like for her to live with this. And going back to the point we talked about in this call about where your pain can help you to be in service of others. I mean, she's living with breast cancer, and she's set up this Copperfeel charity to help others to identify breast cancer from a much earlier stage. So, I mean, that is courage personified, isn't it?
It's amazing. And you know, what I love is, you know, the first thing I'm going to do when we get off this call is I'm going to tweet the audio of this call. And I'm gonna tag Chris, right? And I'm gonna say, listen, Chris, you've got to listen to this, right?
Thanks, Scott.
Not?
That's great. Yeah. Why not? Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I just to kind of shout you out and say, you know, I think the conversation you and Chris would have would be incredible. I think it'd be hugely inspiring to your Boulder community and to people outside of that. And you know, absolutely, go for it. I say.
Yeah. I will. I shall. And thank you for the support. And then the other part of your question was about being courageous on this call, or what do I want?
Yeah,
to
like, well, I mean, you've kind of stepped into it. I guess, you know, because you mentioned, you said sometimes you get off the call and you think, oh, you know, I wish I had, you know, done that or done that. And so I wanted to give, you know, open up a space of permission for you to experiment on this call, you know, maybe do something that feels a bit scary, but you've kind of done it, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, really, there's no courageousness to it. How long do we have? Have we got what?
Oh, we can go as long as we like. I haven't really set. Generally, these have ended up being about an hour long, but crikey, you know, if we're on a roll, let's just keep going.
wanted to turn it back on to you because I am really curious. So we met about, gosh, was it 5 years ago? Was it more? I don't remember if.
Probably about 5 years ago, yeah, 5 or 6. I've been back in the UK probably 6 years, so it will have been between 5 and 6 years.
So we met on an art of hosting workshop, which was all about giving space to others, I guess, to do meaningful work. And then I kind of last year I saw, oh, you've become a proactive coach, and we both live in the same city, but I haven't seen you because of the pandemic. So I'm just really
Right.
curious, like, what led you to coaching and you know, the courage, like what do you want others, what do you want courage to do for others? So yeah, back to you, Scott.
No,
I
love
want to
it,
know
love it.
more about what's led you to become a coach and yeah, what you want courage to help others to do.
Love those questions. What do you want courage to do for others? Oh, I'll do them in order, shall I? Why not? What led me to coaching? Well, everything's led me to coaching, really. I guess in some respects, you know, it's tempting to come up with a narrative, a story of how this inciting moment was the thing. And but in truth, it's probably all of those things that have like brought me on this weird and wonderful journey to this point. But a few kind of key milestone moments. One is when I was studying for a master's in media and communications in Australia, in Melbourne, I had an opportunity to tutor in the School of Media and Communications. And yeah, I guess doing a little bit of lecturing and then taking quite a lot of tutorials, a lot of them first year, but some third year and some postgraduate tutorials as well. I guess that was the first real experience I'd had of how exciting it felt when people learned together and came to realizations, not just about information, like not just like, oh, okay, now I understand what, you know, this theory of the media is about, or what, you know, this theory of the media is about. But it's really when they came to their own understanding of what they cared about in relation to it. So these, you know, especially I guess teaching the youngest kids and these sort of 18, 19-year-olds fresh out of school, you know, where largely they'd been spoon-fed information and perhaps thinking for yourself wasn't the order of the day so much. To see that moment when they realized that their voice was really important and that their opinion mattered. Yeah, that was the bit that got me really excited. And alongside that, you know, to work with these young people over a period of, you know, some of them over a 3-year degree, you know, over a couple of years, taking various modules and classes and encountering them at different times, just to see their progress, to see them step more fully into who they could be. You know, recognizing that potential right from that first go and then seeing them just, you know, be more and more themselves in the work was just such a buzz. You know, so much so now I'm friends with a lot of the people we taught when we were at university, and you know, they're doing incredible things, but more to the point, it still is a buzz for me to see them being more and more themselves in the world. So I think I didn't know it at the time, but that was an early experience of me really valuing being part of that process that people come to know themselves. Probably a, you know, another key moment was getting coaching. I think that's, you know, I had no real clue what coaching was, I don't think. And I was enrolled in the On Purpose program. It's a 1-year kind of career transition program of sorts, I guess, but it takes mid-career professionals from the private sector and provides them with opportunities to kind of move into the public sector or move into more purposeful work. And so within that program, you're given a coach. And so I had a coach, Neil, for the year. We met sort of 4 or 5 times. And I'm not sure I fully kind of got what coaching was through that relationship, but I got a sense of what it was. And I was, you know, my curiosity was piqued. I was like, wow, this is a job. You know, people sort of sit down together and have these kind of conversations that are, you know, very spacious, you know, lots of possibility to explore, you know, not just an interesting topic, for example, but who you are, you know, and what you think about the world. And so for me, that was like, wow, okay, you know, these are all sort of just slowly emerging topics for me, I guess, in a way. But that suddenly gave it a concrete form and said, yeah, this is a job. Like, this, people get paid to do this. Mm-hmm. And then on the On Purpose program, one of the placements that I was at, and I subsequently went on to work with them for about a year and a half after the placement as well, was an organization called B-Lab. Mm-hmm. B-Lab is an organization that supports for-profit businesses to begin measuring and managing their social and environmental impact and sustainability. And B-Lab supports a particular certification for businesses where they can, if they choose to, they can measure and manage their impact and then get certified and become what's called a B Corporation or a B Corp. And so I was working with B Corp, and they, and you know, small team, four or five of us, and our executive director at the time, Katie, said, you know, what would be great is if we got a coach in to work with us as a team and individually as well. And so I was then really, you know, grateful to be paired up with a guy called Peter from an amazing organization called Kairos Coaching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's a moment where I really found a coach whose style and presence, you know, just resonated so much with me. And I was like, wow, you know, it was kind of a fanboy moment. I was really like, I want to do what you do, basically.
Yeah.
I didn't say that because it didn't seem that appropriate in the context of the types of conversations we were having. But I was thinking it. I was really like, I like this guy. I like the way he's showing up in the world. I like this work that he gets to do. And he's a serious guy. You know, he's not noodling around the edges with this stuff. He's a professional coach. He has his own company. You know, I was really inspired, I guess, by who he was. I could immediately think, oh, I want this guy as a mentor sort of thing. Mm. And I guess, you know, a moment where it really kind of crystallized is towards the end of our coaching relationship. Peter kind of said to me, he said, you know what, Scott, he said, I think you'd make an excellent coach. And it really, I mean, it caught me completely by surprise, because still, even at this point, I mean, it sounds almost silly saying it, because there were these moments where, you know, I thought, oh, coaching. But that was the first moment where I thought, oh, this guy who I, you know, I have a deep respect for and who I really believe, you know, is doing interesting work in the world. He's looking at me thinking, this guy's got some interesting qualities that might make him suitable for this work. And so that really triggered in me a deeper curiosity about this work, which, you know, led to a bunch of other experiments. And, you know, I'm so glad that I had some of those formative moments, because, yeah, along the way, I guess, you know, this thing called coaching is some of what I had been doing, you know, aspects, you know, some of the skills that we learn in coach training, you know, are skills that are generally applicable in life, but they are specifically skills that I had been finding, you know, great pleasure in various different jobs, you know, but never joining the dots and knowing that if you tried to master these skills and trained in these skills, then this thing called coaching is a career path, and is, you know, even if you don't choose to become a full-time coach, these are a great skill set to develop and are going to add huge value to whatever you do in the world. So I guess, you know, like, now joining the dots, I talk about, well, yeah, duh, of course, I was kind of always a coach. That's not true, but I'm so grateful that I had some of these experiences that led me to this realization that actually coaching is something I care deeply about. And you talked earlier about feeling like you're just lit up, that you've come alive. That's how I feel in this work. And it sounds a bit, you know, hallmark cheesy, but it's really the first kind of job where my overwhelming experience of the work is feeling like that. So I can really say, listen, I'm 40 now. God, I wish I'd come to these realizations when I was 20, but I guess it just takes time for us to get to where we need to get to.
Yeah.
So I'm just really grateful that I'm here right now. And you know what? I call myself a coach, and, you know, and that's important because it's an invitation for other people to find me in that. But I'm also very open-minded about this work, you know. Right now it feels like coaching, and that's where my interest and my focus is. Mm. But I think underlying that is a broader set of skills and a way I want to be in the world. And so right now I'm channeling that into coaching, but I also do facilitation work. You know, and frankly, you know, my coaching arrives in whatever work I'm doing, in the way I build interpersonal relationships with people, in the way I, you know, we talked about it earlier, try and speak my truth, you know, in a compassionate way as well, in the way I try and hold space for accountability for myself and for other people, you know, the integrity with which I show up. So, you know, I think that kind of speaks a little bit to the what led you to coaching question that you had. And
so what I'd love to know now, so like courage is your topic for this month, and you're doing some wonderful things yourself to test your own courage, you know, getting in the sea and dancing, filming yourself dancing and singing beautifully on the beach. With everything that's going on in the world right now, Scott, what are you drawn to in terms of your courage to show up for others? Like, so coaching is about unlocking potential and lighting other people up. Like, where would your courage show up if you move towards something that's happening in the world that you want to make a difference in?
Yeah. So for a long time, my answer to this has been working with Dad. We have, you know, and I was in a conversation with somebody yesterday about this, actually. You know, we're living in a patriarchy, right? A patriarchal society, one where it's designed largely by men for men. You know, it doesn't mean there aren't lots of spaces that are not like that, but the kind of general trend is towards that. And what I've been reflecting on is, you know, in many ways it serves men, right, and disadvantages women. And we know this from, you know, pay gaps, you know, ageism that sits more within, you know, gender binaries. There's all sorts of ways in which women are disenfranchised in the world with as opposed to men. And yet what I also know from the work I've done with many dads and with people I've been in coaching with is a lot of men are not benefiting from the very kind of stereotypical shut down, emotionally stunted, you know, stories about manhood and about fatherhood, you know, and so, like, you know, and I was having this conversation yesterday with somebody who runs a community for women, and she, you know, we just found ourselves on the same page. You know, patriarchy isn't working. You know, an uneven society is not working to help men or women, actually. You know, yes, there's people kind of who are making more money and there's people who are getting more opportunities. But more generally, this unequal and uneven and gender uneven society is broken. And so a big part of my work is my intervention point is working with dads to try and address that. That's one area that I still feel deeply and passionately connected to. And part of it is because I am a dad. I know the value of conscious, connected, you know, present fatherhood, you know, and there's so many things we can do. Like, often when we're having a conversation about how do we change the world, right? Wherever you start in that conversation, we always end up talking about education, right? It's always like, oh, you just go further and further back saying, oh, we need to intervene earlier and earlier. And education is absolutely a key area. And for me, what I also know is I want to help specifically dads, at least in the first 5 years of their fatherhood, really show up for themselves. And as a result of showing up for themselves, really getting to know themselves, you know, show up in their relationships as fathers and as family members and as husbands and as sons as well. In ways that enrich the lives of the people around them, lay solid foundations, you know, of safety, security, but also like joy, playfulness, adventure, curiosity. And so, you know, I absolutely wish for that to be the case. But I wanted to talk about, you know, if we talk about kind of something that's a bit bolder in this conversation, you know, throughout January, I've been writing pretty much every day a short piece, 250 words or more, about courage. Part of this is a challenge to myself to write and publish publicly, to develop my writing, but also to challenge myself to do that, right? Step out of my own comfort zone. And so on the 18th of January, which is, I guess, probably like Monday maybe or something like that, I wrote about Martin Luther King Jr. Because it was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And some of what I wrote there is actually just kind of calling myself out. So I think where I probably haven't been as courageous as I could have been in my life is around becoming an ally for people who are more disenfranchised. And I think to some extent there's a bit of a risk. So for listeners tuning in, I live in Brighton. Andrea lives in Brighton too. Brighton is a wonderful place. It's a very diverse place. It's a place that you might say is quite woke or quite quite aware of, you know, this stuff. And at the same time, I feel like there's a tendency sometimes for people to, for want of a much more elegant phrase, like the smell of their own farts a bit too much.
and so
you know, what I've recognized in myself is, you know, here I am in this lovely place, and am I really being courageous enough in the way I'm showing up for people who are really experiencing who are being discriminated against? And so you know, when I was writing about this, you know, there's a quote, you know, there's a few quotes, and I'll share a little bit of it. This is a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. quote. He says, "Courage is an inner resolution to go forward despite obstacles. Cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when we must take a position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but one must take it because it is right." You know? And my response to that in my writing was like, what does it mean for me to risk personal safety, reputation, and popularity for a much higher purpose? You know, and I think this is a call for me to be more courageous in the way I become an ally. You know, and so I, you know, listen, there's a lot of areas in our world that are broken and need help and need fixing. And I'm conscious of my own energy and how much I can bring to all these different areas. But something that I've noticed in myself is, you know, is that difficult feeling we sometimes have where we see injustice in the world and we see inequality. And our first response is perhaps a deep kind of wound, a pain that we feel. And our second is to kind of just say, I just don't have the bandwidth. I can't. And then just sort of almost block it out. And I want to explore for myself, what does it mean to step a bit more courageously into letting it in and understanding how I can act in that space. So that's the other big one for me right now, is how do I become an ally? And that doesn't mean just reading about stuff. It means, what am I doing in the world to make it a more fair place?
I'm really struck by how much you come alive and you light up when you talk about the patriarchy and also your own rage and how that is, you know, discomfort. And I think particularly I am a mum of two boys, 8 and 5. They're just wonderful. And I constantly think about, the role that is carved out for them, the sort of what's expected of them in society. And my husband and I, we often talk because I want them to be able to express their emotions in a way and not feel that they have to suppress them and push them down. And, you know, boys don't cry still it lingers in society, and it's a sort of suppression of emotions and being strong. And of course we know the stats as well, like, you know, male suicide is the biggest killer amongst sort of your age group. And so the patriarchy, it really isn't working. And I guess just to end, to kind of leave that there, like the little fragments of courage and boldness that I see emerging in you, Scott, are definitely you're lighting up around these areas. And you've been doing that work, and I think for men to connect with how they're really truly feeling or where their discomfort is, not that you can only work with men, but you really came alive kind of thinking about that, and that's obviously coming out in your work and your writing and your, what does it mean to be an ally? What does it mean to not be right? What does it mean to think of some of those fringes? But I've loved this conversation with you. We've well gone over time.
There is no such thing. We've got the freedom to do whatever we want. But I agree. I think this is a beautiful place for us to pause, because there'll be other conversations for sure. I've actually just today. So I've got, like, if you talk about being bolder, I've set myself a target this year of writing pretty much every day. So writing 250 words or more every day. There's been a couple of days already where I haven't managed it, and then there's a couple of days where I've written twice. So I'm just trying to kind of, you know, just, it's about output really, in a way, just exploring by doing, right? And so January, I've decided courage is the container. I'm just going to voraciously and, you know, really curiously explore this topic of courage through my writing, through my reading, through these conversations that I'm having with these brilliant people. And just today, actually, in conversation with a friend yesterday, I've sort of defined what I want to do for the rest of the year. So I know already that my topic for February will be death. You know, March is connection. April is clarity. May is compassion. June is fatherhood. July is play. August is calmness. September, curiosity. October, creativity. November, confidence. And December, gratitude. And so, yeah, part of this is just a feeling of like there's so much to explore, you know. And I'm really committed at this point to just going out there and exploring. As I use that word, voracious, you know, I'm so hungry, you know, to deepen my understanding of these topics. And more importantly, I think, to do it in a large way through these types of conversations. And so I just, you know, almost as a closing, wanted to just express my thanks, my deep gratitude to you, Andrea, for, you know, we're four of these conversations in, and you know, who knows what they are really, but they're developing, and it takes a little bit of courage to sign up for something where it doesn't really have a structure, it doesn't have a format, and we don't know where we're going. So I just wanted to say a great big thank you to you for being part of this conversation, for contributing so amazingly and sharing, you know, your experience of courage. And yeah, just to wish you well as you head on.
Thank you very much. And I'm really have enjoyed this conversation. It sounds like a fascinating year of exploration for you. And thanks for inviting me to be part of it, Scott. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Brilliant. Andrea, all the best.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.